Welcome back to DougHammock.com and to our current project on rethinking sex education. As you know, I try each week to post some thoughts to help get a conversation started about creating a viable, a helpful way to educate our young people about sexuality, because what we're doing now really isn't working. And I do hope that you'll join in on the project. I hope you'll comment. Thanks for the many who do. And at the end of the project, I'm going to turn what we learned together into a book. So let's begin with this week's episode. The title is Having the Sex Talk and Doing It Before Things Get Hairy. I'm a minister in a spiritual community that speaks pretty frankly about sexuality. And once folks figure out that sex is a safe topic for conversation, well, then parents and grandparents, aunts, uncles, youth leaders, those who have a vested interest in the well-being of our kids will often ask me this question: how soon should I start talking to my kids about sex? The kids are 6 or 8 or 10. Is it time yet? And here's the quick answer that I usually give folks about when: early and often. It's a good idea to start talking to our kids about sex about the same time that we start talking to them about nutrition, at the same time and at about the same depth. When they're 3 years old, we are already talking to our kids about candy and about vegetables. We don't have to give them a seminar on amino acids, but we do have to give them the basic picture that some foods make you feel good, others give you a tummy ache. So if we step back from the sex craziness in the church and in our culture, if we restore a healthy approach to sexuality, we can do just that. We can speak to our kids about sex with about the same ease that we speak to them about food. We can normalize the conversation. We can make it matter of course. Now, in a previous episode, we saw that in the Song of Songs, that wisdom literature from the Jewish scriptures, we saw how deeply this young man in the poem was anticipating sexual union. He was looking forward to the woman that he would share his life with, and we saw how he was aware of the scent that is associated with a woman's sexual arousal. Now, a question that occurs to us on this side of the Neoplatonic worldview that made sex all uptight and weird is, the question that occurs is, how did he know that? He was a young man, he was a single man, he'd never been with a woman, yet he knew about this scent. How did he know that? Well, he knew because his people told him about it. In the Hebrew tradition, before Neoplatonic dirty sex crept in, sexuality was treated as an integral part of life. Since God made all of creation and said, "It is good, it is good, it is good," then sexuality, including erotic desire, is good. And that being the case, we celebrate it. We don't hide from it. We don't get embarrassed in front of our kids about it. We honor it, we respect it, and we teach about it freely. We talk about it with our kids, again, as a matter of course. Now, the Hebrew tradition had very clear guidelines for young people. This is what works. This is what doesn't. Do it at this time. Wait until that time to do that. It was set with norms and time-honored codes that capture in practice what the ancient wisdom that we've been looking at in these last two sections has taught. There were even norms for what to do when passion got out of bounds, wisdom norms that taught us, here's how you make it right when you've gone awry. And through it all, the message was clear. We, the community, we, the family, as a multi-generational community of people, we will stand with you. We are intimately familiar with your burning desire, and we celebrate it. We'll even tell you about how it smells. But we'll also stand between you and the object of your affection, and together we'll say, not yet. In time, but not yet. There are some things you need to know and some things you need to get into place for sex to work for you for a lifetime. There's some upfront psychological and emotional work to do, processes you're going to need to honor. But when the day comes, when we say now, and you and your beloved consummate your relationship, then we're going to have a party. And when you're done, you'll come out and we'll cheer because we love you and we love life. And we celebrate the beauty of love and life and passion and eroticism. And we celebrate the relational context into which all of that fits. The Hebrew worldview made a celebration out of sexuality. Not something weird, not something uncomfortable or hidden away like a dirty little secret. It was out there. It was spoken about. It was modeled. And it all unfolded in the context of loving community. It happened along with people who knew the fiery passion of unconsummated desire, but also the fiery pleasure of full consummation. But also, they knew about the pragmatic demands that were necessary to make love last for a lifetime. And we've lost that. We've lost this open-hearted, open-minded, normalized cultural way. So family and church really provide our best option for getting those things restored back into community life. Family and church are essential places to have these conversations. If parents and grandparents and extended family and youth leaders don't normalize sexual training, well, our young people have no option but to figure it out on their own, usually with their peers. So we start having sex chats with our kids young. We start talking about sex about the time we start talking to them about brushing their teeth. And then we start talking about candy. We're talking about sex at the same time. When we're talking about too much candy makes you throw up, we're talking about sex at about that same level. And if we start early that way, everybody, parents and children alike, get comfortable with the process early on. That way, when the conversations get tougher later on, when the kids are older, all that awkwardness has been worked through. We tell our kids where babies come from as soon as they ask. We wouldn't not tell them where food comes. If sex hadn't been corrupted by the Neoplatonic influence, we'd treat it as normally as we do bath time or learning to tie shoes or learning to make the bed. If speaking naturally about sexual things is uncomfortable for you, well, that's okay. Just get a book because there's a lot of them out there. It's Not the Stork. That's the title of a good one. It's well-researched. It's age-appropriate for the very young. And it's part of a series of books on sexuality for each age group, so you can use that series as they get older. So start young and be frank. If there's awkwardness or weirdness, work through it while they're young. We celebrate sexuality, so normalize it as a gift. It is good. It is good. Talk about it around the dinner table. Sure, the kids will roll their eyes. Sure, they'll say, there's Dad again talking about sex, but they'll listen. When we normalize sex talk, we make it possible to celebrate our children's sexual desire. When we normalize sex talk early on, we make it possible to talk easily when they get to middle school, when the topic starts to take center stage. When we normalize sex talk early on, we buy access to our kids later when they need us to give them the broader picture, when they need us to talk to them in been there, seen the other side kinds of terms. So again, get some help if it's difficult for you. Read some books. Find something in the library like How to Speak to Your Teenager About Sex. Read it. Pick out the parts that fit your personality. Talk about it with your adult friends. In some circles, that'll bring up embarrassment, but sometimes you'll learn something helpful from other parents. Denise and I, we spoke to our children when they were very young. Like many, it was uncomfortable for Denise. She wanted me to do it without her, and I laughed. I said, sure, if we want to make it weird, that'll do the trick. So I told her that we would all sit together. I would do most of the talking. All she had to do was sit there and smile. And I told her, smile like this is the most normal thing in the world. And to her credit, she did. And once we were into it, it stopped being weird. She jumped in like a champ. Later, I heard her telling her embarrassed friends about the first time and about how she was cringing inside, but she kept that silly smile plastered on her face, and it's a story we laugh about now. But we got one of those sex books for the kids. It had pictures. They were painted in soft pastels, but they were letting the kids know exactly what's happening, exactly where tab A fits into slot B, exactly where semen is ejaculated, exactly where eggs descend, exactly where the babies gestate, exactly where babies come into the world. So we read that book with them and filled in some stuff here and there that wasn't in the book, and we answered all their questions. And at the time, our daughter was in kindergarten, which now we know is a little bit late to start. And she'd already picked up enough to know that she should be feeling embarrassed. So I watched her. She kept looking at her mother, checking to see if this was an okay thing that we were talking about this. And their mom was, with that big smile plastered on her face. But our son, who's 18 months younger than his sister, he hadn't picked up the cultural weirdness yet. Wow, Dad, he said, that's great. It's just like a train that drives into a tunnel. That's really great. So after they'd heard the whole thing, and all their questions that had been answered, well, then I said this. I said, now, you're going to hear a lot of kids talking about sex, and they're going to giggle, and they're going to talk like it's a secret thing. But now, you guys know the real story. You are completely in the know. So when you hear the other kids snickering, and when you hear them talking in hushed tones, you can say to yourself, I know all about this stuff. I probably know more than they do. Because again, you know the whole story. But, kids, could you do me a favor? I'm your parent, and this is such an important part of life, I wanted to be the one to tell you about it. And I suspect that your friends' parents, they're adults, would really want to be the ones to tell them about it, too. So even though you know the whole story now, instead of telling your friends everything you know, why don't you give your friends, adults, a chance to tell it to them? And that's how we did it. One time, when the kids were very young, all together in the room, then again, when their younger brother was ready, and again after that, when it was time for the 5 to 7 year old book, and then again, when it was now you're in the middle school book. And along the way, I would do Google searches for sex jokes that I could tell around the dinner table, just so that I could make sure that the conversation was still being talked about. I would look for jokes that didn't demean, which really isn't very hard because sex really is funny. And when they got to middle school, they'd object to their weird dad who talked about sex all the time, even when their friends were over at the house. But I'd soldier on, and I would tell the jokes, and I would make sure it was part of our normal everyday conversation. I would soldier on, alluding to the fact that sex was a part of their parents' life, which really made them uncomfortable. They'd make sounds like they were choking, but they'd listen. And along the way, the topic became normalized. And when it was time for serious conversations, they knew that they could talk to Dad, and they knew that they could talk to Mom. And they did, frankly, and openly, and curiously. And honestly, one of the great joys in my life has been to have these honest, frank, and comfortable conversations about sex with my children. Now, I've told enough parents this story to know how many will respond. Oh, man, Doug, my kid is already 12, and I haven't done much talking yet. Well, not to worry. Earlier is better because it makes it easier. Earlier is better because you don't have as much embarrassment in the system on either side early on. But it's not too late. It's late, but not too late. It'll be harder, but it won't be too hard. The only wrong time to start talking to our kids about sexual wisdom is never. So in our homes, we can stand against the religious craziness we looked at in these last two sections. We can stand against those insertions that got stuck into our tradition in the second century from those Neoplatonic origins. And we can right the pendulum swing that has swung too far to either side. And we can make a good case for healthy sexual practice that factors in the whole journey, the whole of the human experience. So, we can right what has gone so historically wrong, and we can learn the wisdom of the ages. We can be the voice of reason and wisdom and understanding for our kids. And I hope that we will. And I hope that the conversations that we'll be looking at in these next episodes will help you do it. So, what are you thinking about? What's stirring up in your heart? Post your thoughts, post your comments, any questions, any doubts you've got. You can either put it on the Facebook post where I posted this episode, or you can do it right on the website. I'd love to hear what you're thinking.